And a good sunny Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Another loaded show for you. We're excited about it. I said the gang would be back together again today. We would be like Rush, reunited, the three-man band. Well, it's going to be a little bit fractured again today because Chase is going to have to slide over to afternoons again today starting at 2, so I think we're going to talk to him here.
I'm here.
And then a little bit there.
I know.
And then a little bit over there.
I'm
something like that.
I'm playing in a doubleheader today, but you know, I'm on a pitch count for I guess the first half.
Yeah, you're like a utility man in the first game, but you're going to get the start in the second game.
I know. It's so. Listen, you know Jeremy Benefield, he told me very early on, be a sponge, do it all, and I took that a little too seriously, but here we are. So happy to help. Hope Jared gets to feeling better. So he put everything out on Twitter yesterday that he has COVID, but hopefully he's feeling a little bit better today. So happy to step in where I can.
Good deal. Darren McFarland here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. You just heard Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue, and Willie Donick is here in East Nashville hanging with us.
Are you in my backyard? You're here in East Nashville?
No. I said,
oh, are you on vacation again?
No, I'm not going to camp in your backyard.
The tent's still up back there.
I'll tell you what, the storms we had last night, I would not have wanted to have been in a tent in your backyard.
We had some serious lightning. We had some electricity flowing.
It got rough. Got rough for a little bit.
It was, in fact, it was like a tornado watch at one point, and we were in a 10 building and doing an indoor baseball practice, and got a little hairy. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have.
Mm-hmm.
Been a fan of that.
Luckily we had a lot of, you know, some loud music, and it kind of drowned out really what was going on, or I think it may have gotten our senses may have been heightened a little bit, and we may have been a little bit more frightened if we could truly hear what was going on outside. But and then it just continued on, at least for a while here in Rutherford County. I don't know about you guys, but a lot of lightning last night and thunder. Yeah. And some pretty heavy rains at times, so doesn't look like that today. So we'll enjoy the weather, enjoy the temps that are up there. That was another thing. Having it up in the 60s was very nice again, but I think it'll get cold again probably later in the week.
Yeah, not going to be cold. The weather's weird.
Yep, you're right. We're getting close, right? Getting close to spring where it's going to be all over the place. You get those crazy spikes in temperatures, and we have to bring up the T word that I just mentioned, and lots of rain and all that good stuff. But we're not going to let any of that affect today's show. We'll talk to Terry McCormick coming up here soon. Our weekly chat with David Poyle will be at 11:15. Brad Johnson, former Super Bowl winning quarterback, will join us at high noon. We're excited about that.
Those two sport guys.
Yeah.
He was quite a basketball player at Florida State as well as quarterback.
I don't really remember him as a basketball
player. Oh, he was good. He was really good. That was a very talented Florida State team.
I'll let you ask the question. You need to ask him.
Oh, I will.
How serious did he ever, you know, how far did he ever take in choosing the sports? How far did basketball?
I'll ask him. I met him a long time ago. I played on a summer league baseball team with some Florida State guys. And he and the guy he shared time with at Florida State, if you're a Florida State fan, you might remember this name, but he and Casey Weldon were kind of a tandem at quarterback. You know, this was in the prime Bobby Bowden, late 80s, 90s, when Florida State was always in the mix somewhere, right? And they came down and just were hanging out with some friends of theirs on our team. And I was like, man, we got to suit these guys up. These are guys who are pretty good athletes. They were just messing around in the outfield, you know, throwing the ball to each other and, you know, pretending to play baseball. I was like, why don't you guys suit up? It's just a summer league game. But really nice guy, I think. And, of course, his son's now the quarterback at LSU. So there's a lot to talk to Brad about.
Yeah.
Of course, he quarterbacked the Bucks to the whole shebang. I remember those days well. Yeah. That was the debate we used to have. Brad Johnson, good, solid quarterback in the NFL. Never great, But when the question comes up, you know, can you win a Super Bowl without a great quarterback like we're going to see in this Super Bowl, right? It's Mahomes and Brady. Like, that's the Super Bowl you love, right? But there are some teams over the years where you just have a good, decent, solid quarterback and a great rest of the team.
Well, to be honest, our guest on Friday's show, Trent Dilfer, and our guest today at noon are, I think, the only examples where you could say they had, you know, the guy that says they're not elite, but you can win with them. Everything's got to be right around them. They're the only two that actually won. You think about Jared Goff just recently with the Rams, didn't win. Who was Chicago Bears in 06? Who was the
Rex Grossman?
Rex Grossman, right? Okay.
What was the name of the
lost?
What was the offense that called the Rex Show? What was the?
I don't remember.
Yeah, wasn't it in the Kyle Rex Orton show? Was on that team?
Did they do a video at the beginning of the season saying they were going to the Super Bowl?
No,
they did not.
No.
But that was a story though. It was a classic. Remember we did the thing in last summer, like what franchise has had the worst quarterback play? And
oh,
it's
yeah.
the Bears. Mm-hmm. They've had good teams, they've had shaky quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. But they lost with Rex. I mean, there's really, I think, help me with this, I think Trent Dilfer and Brad Johnson are the only two. Rich Gannon lost. Those guys.
But, like, Gannon was the MVP of the league. Like, that was.
You're just saying.
He
was elite for that season. How about that?
I'd say for about three or four seasons late in his career, they had it cranking pretty well.
Now
on that Raiders offense,
this is
but
more,
nobody really considered Rich Gannon elite.
No,
well,
but I
think he was elite. When you're the MVP
kinda.
Of the league for that year, you're elite. I mean, like Mark Rypien is another example, right? He won one for the Redskins. He put it all together for that one year. It was what, 91, somewhere in there. They beat the Bills. Mm-hmm. He was lights out, but he was never really that great before or after. He was mm-hmm. good.
Yep.
So that's like a separate category. I would say like Johnson and Dilfer, those even in the season that they won it, they weren't elite. They were just, you know, steady enough to win.
What about
like Jim Plunkett?
I was young, maybe. But what about Jeff Hostetler?
That's a good one. He took over in the late in the season for Phil Sims. Mm-hmm. That's a great example, and he was steady.
But those guys were definitely
not elite.
Those guys were the starters all year. Hostetler took over.
Right.
How about Jim Plunkett? Would he be one for the Raiders? He won two.
Because it's like Nick Foles. It's Nick Foles was the quarterback for the last 20% of the Eagles season, and they won a Super Bowl with him.
Yeah, I think they're kind of some subcategories there.
Yeah.
I've always looked at Dilfer and Johnson as the ones that they – well, and actually, no, Dilfer, I don't think he did start every game.
No, Tony Banks
started the season. You're right. He didn't start the season.
But that wasn't due to injury. It was lack of performance by – Banks, they just made a switch.
Yeah.
But we have subcategories to our category.
I know, right? I'm curious to hear him talk about, you know,
you guys,
his son.
You got nothing on Plunkett? Don't you think Plunkett's
No, Plunkett's,
won?
Yeah, Plunkett's.
Was, I don't think he was a Pro Bowl
I can't
guy.
Add
he was just good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was a late bloomer. He was a Heisman Trophy guy, first pick in the draft that was kind of going nowhere in his career. Then suddenly, late in his career, he took over for Dan Pastorini. And then for the next few years, he was a good, solid quarterback on a great team.
See, these are all names I've heard my dad bring up because he was a big, big fan of those teams back in the day. So,
how would you categorize Neil O'Donnell?
I would say he's in that category. Good, solid quarterback. He was certainly never the MVP of the league.
Nope.
But he was very good. Right,
took a team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and consistent winner for a long time in Pittsburgh. Right, his teams were always in it.
I mean, that AFC Championship game between the Steelers and the Colts. You know, that was
Jim Harbaugh versus Neil O'Donnell.
That was a fun one. You were at that, right?
I was at it.
Here's another 1 year guy. Like, if you think of the Redskins, back when they were called the Redskins under Joe Gibbs, they had a different quarterback. And they had the 1 year where Doug Williams emerged and caught fire, and he was the MVP of the Super Bowl. But he wasn't always the starter, right? He was the starter sometimes, and then Jay Schrader was the quarterback sometimes, and then one of them would be hurt. Remember, that was an interesting stage of Doug Williams' career. He wasn't an elite quarterback for the entire year that year. He certainly had an incredible Super Bowl. Remember, he just started raining touchdown passes against the Broncos.
Where do you put Flacco in this conversation?
That's another good one, right? Good. Never good. MVP of the league.
Nope.
Never. I would never say he was elite. He was in the very good. He and Neil O'Donnell would be similar in my mind.
I would agree with that. Yep.
Chris Chandler from the 98 Falcons. They didn't win, but, I mean, that's put him up there, too. Had almost a 4,000-yard passing season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was probably his best year. Yeah, that was probably his best year. Yeah, the Oilers let him go to clear the way for Steve McNair.
Did he play the year in Memphis, or was he the last year in Houston?
No, he was the last year in Houston.
96.
And then the Titans, well, still the Oilers at the time, they brought in Dave Craig, remember? To back up Steve McNair for a couple of years before they brought in Neil O'Donnell.
Yeah, because Neil's first year, I think, was 99.
Well, and also, if you remember, Chris Chandler, and this was really before we started covering the team, but Chris Chandler was not happy about being the guy that was going to help Steve McNair along, and I'm going to show this guy the way. You know, they had him there for a year or two, but once it became clear that Steve McNair is going to be the starter, remember, they sat Steve McNair for 2 years, Chandler was like, I don't want to be a part of this. I'm out. Mm-hmm. So they got rid of him.
Yep. Worked out all right for him.
Yeah. Chandler, he proved he deserved to be playing. He went to Atlanta and helped him.
He played until 2004.
Wow.
For a bunch of teams. Mm-hmm. He played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams.
And this is my greatest faux pas on the air that I think I wanted to melt into the floor of the studio. We had Dan Reeves on, the coach of the Falcons, and they had just acquired Chris Chandler, and I asked him about his new quarterback, Elvis Gerback.
Close enough.
He says, well, we don't have Elvis Gerback. and that was the first word, and I thought I was going to die right
there.
Did
you see Cam Newton on the bench this year for the Patriots, yeah, that GIF that's out there? That's what Willie did.
That's exactly.
He just slid right out of his chair and underneath the table.
That's funny.
He says, the guy you're thinking about is Chris Chandler. And I was like,
don't.
Hey, we've all done it. We've all had the faux pas.
We'll come back. Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. We'll talk about what offseason moves the Titans are about to do. Coordinators, coaching hires, all the above. We'll do that with Terry on the other side. Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth. Bring up Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com is where you can find his work. Going back through, I guess, memory lane or down memory lane with some of the quarterbacks back in the day that we saw come through here. Terry would remember. He started covering them in Memphis, so in that 97 season. So he's been covering them ever since. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. Let's just start with the task at hand for Mike Vrabel, right, to try to complete a staff. This is what happens when you have success, when you start winning. Typically, you start losing coaches. And Mike Vrabel's no different than a lot of other guys that have had success. And now he's got two coordinator positions that, he's either going to look outside or he's going to hire within. But a lot of candidates that we've discussed that you would think, maybe he just, at least – there's consideration. They've all been hired away. Anthony Lynn is now an OC. Bill O'Brien's now an OC. Where do you think Mike Vrabel? I know they're going to keep quiet. They usually keep things very, very quiet. But where do you think this is going on both offense and defense for coordinators?
Well, we'll start on offense. There was a report that he had interviewed Pep Hamilton, the former Stanford quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator, later was the OC of the Indianapolis Colts. I think he's been with the Chargers and was Justin Herbert's quarterbacks coach in his rookie year. So that's one guy that has been out there as reportedly been looked at. And I think, you know, the thing with Mike Vrabel, he likes familiarity, or seems to anyway. So I don't know how far out, you know, he will branch from his comfort zone. You know, he got lucky in doing that with Arthur Smith. He didn't get so lucky in doing that last year by himself and Shane Bowen sharing the defensive coordinator position. So, you know, it's kind of hit or miss here as to which way he'll go. You know, if you're looking at guys who are on the staff, you know, once again, not a lot of experience with play callers there. Now, granted, Arthur Smith didn't have that experience either. But the only guy who has prior play calling experience is Todd Downing, who was the offensive coordinator for the then Oakland Raiders, I think, in 2017. So that's your pretty much your limitation, unless you want to go way back and go with Pat O'Hara, who was a play caller in the Arena League. So pretty limited in terms of play callers available on the current staff. I think he's probably going to have to look outside a little bit and see. You know, they were supposedly denied permission to talk to Tim Kelly of the Texans. Interestingly enough, he is the brother of Titans right tackle Dennis Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
But once the Texans make a move and once they hire a coach, if that whoever they hire doesn't want Tim Kelly to stay on the staff, then they would be free to talk to him.
It's always fun, you know, doing the hindsight. So let's do it. That's what you do on Sports Talk Radio. Let's start with the kicker. Can you imagine? Just think about all the woes that they had last season, and certainly they had their share this season. Luckily, they got them corrected the second half of the season, but the first half was absolutely atrocious again. But last year, just think about their kicking woes, and here's Ryan Succop in the Super Bowl kicking for the Bucs.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable?
It is unbelievable. You know, the three guys that they went through last year, Cody Parkey, Cairo Santos, and Ryan Succop, all had pretty good years this year with their new teams.
Yep.
All three of them were really good. So, you know, it just goes to show you, kicking is a little bit like relief pitching. You know how with a pitcher, sometimes they just lose their location, and all of a sudden they go from, you know, having an ERA of 2 to having an ERA of 7.
Yep.
And then just as suddenly they can go back to having an ERA of 2. So, you know, field goal kicking is kind of the same way. They get in a groove, they get out of a groove, they get back in a groove. It's a crazy business.
No doubt. And then the other hot topic in the offseason, and I know we had you on to weigh in, but we talked to so many people and talked about it so much, I don't remember which side you were on, but it's certainly been revisited again on Sunday after the Bucs punched their ticket into the Super Bowl. Where were you on the Tom Brady, Ryan Tannehill discussion?
Well, you know, I mean, hindsight, like you said, is obviously 2020.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about back when we were discussing. I'm sure we had you on several times and talked about it with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the window of opportunity probably stays open longer with Ryan Tannehill just because he's 10 years younger than Tom Brady. You know, I think, you know, you can't argue with the season that Ryan Tannehill had. For the most part, he put up the best numbers any Titans-era quarterback has ever put up. He had 33 touchdown passes. Since he's been here, I think he's thrown 55 touchdown passes and like 13 interceptions. We've never seen that type of production out of a quarterback here, not even Steve McNair, because he was more of a dual threat type of guy, you know, who put up solid passing numbers, but also the league was a little different then in that there weren't many quarterbacks, you know, around the league throwing 30 touchdown passes back in 2003.
Yeah, and that's why I think this offensive coordinator role is critically important, because the last two offensive coordinators that Tannehill has had in this market are now head coaches in the NFL. And so they've gone on to bigger and better things. And so we know. I mean, the way the defense played this year, do we expect that it'll be better? Yeah, we suspect and expect that it'll be better. Both words. But we don't know. And right now we know that the only thing that worked for sure last year was their offense. If it wasn't for their offense, you know, they're a 6-win team last season. So they have to stay, I don't know, at the same clip. I don't even know if that's possible. But somewhere around there, And so to me, you know, just throwing anybody into that role is probably not a good idea and expecting the same results because, like I said, the last two left, they're no longer here because their head coach is in the league.
Right. And, you know, when you look at it that way and you when you analyze this offense, you know, there are a couple of guys who are key free agents. You know, they don't know if they're going to be able to bring Corey Davis back. They don't know if they're going to be able to bring Jonnu Smith back. But when you look at the direction that this offense is going to have to go, the passing game with Ryan Tannehill provided a superb complement to Derrick Henry in the run game. Now, when you're talking about Derrick Henry, you know, you're talking about a guy who ran for 2,000 yards last season. You know, that doesn't happen very often in the league, only 8 times. Nobody's ever done it twice. Who knows? Maybe Derrick Henry can be the first, but you can't count on that. So if you're thinking that even if Derrick Henry runs for 1,700 yards next year and has an absolute superb follow-up season, you've still got to make up for that lost production of 300-400 yards on the offensive side of the ball, probably with even a better performance in the pass game or, you know, a better performance from the defense. So there's a little bit of pressure on whoever gets this offensive coordinator's job to keep things rolling and also keep things not only the same but kind of moving forward, even if you have to reinvent a couple of things on this offense, just to make sure that you do keep moving forward, if you know what I'm trying to say.
No question. I think more than a little bit of pressure. Just to follow up on that, Terry, I think when we had Trent Dilfer on, Darren, you remember this. I asked him about, you know, what do you do the next year with Derrick Henry? You can't give it to him 380 times again or whatever it was, 376, whatever they ended up. He said he would take 75 runs and turn them into passes for other people. He used RPO. He used a lot of different things. I think that's the gist of it. I don't know if they're all passes, but, you know, take 75 runs away from Derrick Henry. So I think that's an interesting philosophical discussion to have with your new offensive coordinator. You know, what are your thoughts on that one, Terry?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's, you know, when Mike Vrabel sits down and he interviews offensive coordinator candidates, I think his first question or right there near the top is, where do you plan to take this offense based on what it was able to accomplish in 2020? Where do you take it going forward with the weapons that you have? And to me, the biggest weapon on this team that's ascending, aside from Derrick Henry, obviously, which with a running back, you don't know how long the shelf life is going to be. And Derrick Henry certainly seems to be more of a physical freak than most running backs who are out of the league by the time they're 29 or 30 years old. But to me, the ascending player on this offense is A.J. Brown. So I would probably try to start, you know, building more things around A.J. Brown in addition to building things around Derrick Henry on this offense if I'm the next offensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans. Do you guys agree?
I think that's great. And I would take it a step further. That, to me, that also illustrates the importance of having Corey Davis back in there. Because I don't see an alternative to where you can really know exactly what you're getting if you're not bringing him back. Because I think if you're taking, whether the number is 75 or 50 or something like that, you're having that many more passes than you had before, then I'd like to be throwing those passes to Brown and also to Davis.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, now you can roll the dice. You can go into the draft and try to find somebody. You know, if you look at the league this year, the Minnesota Vikings gambled, and they traded Stephon Diggs. Now, granted, they certainly missed his production, but they hit on Justin Jefferson, who they drafted in the first round. This is a deep receiver draft, so, you know, you can, you know, go into the draft, but it is a risky proposition, especially if you're going to try and ask a rookie come up with 900-plus yards receiving and catch 50 to 60 passes in his first time out of the gate. So, you know, they got lucky. A.J. Brown was able to do that last year. But, you know, it's not something that happens frequently in the NFL.
Talking to Terry McCormick, Titan Insider. So, Terry, this is another thing that we were trying to shape up here. We know that the pass rush is something they've got to get fixed. You got the Senior Bowl coming up. You're trying to start your assessment of what's there in the draft, what's there in free agency. Darren and I had a long analogy yesterday about you're going to the grocery store and you need apples. And in a particular year, you need those apples. You go into the grocery store and the apples aren't all that great. That's what happened last year with Beasley and Clowney, right? They tried to address it and they didn't get good apples. So how are the apples this year? What's the free agency market look like for pass rushers?
Look, they better forget the apples. They better go over to the meat aisle and buy some steaks and some roast beef. Okay.
Forget all that they fruit need, stuff.
Okay, so
we need good grade meat then, if that's the analogy.
Yes, they need help in a bad way. Not in a bad way, in a good way, but in a desperate way. You know, one of the guys who's a free agent that was right there on display Sunday was Shaq Barrett of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, if I'm the Bucs, I don't know how in the world I let that guy get out the door as a free agent. But if he does hit the open market, if you're John Robinson, that's somebody that you have to have your eye on. That's somebody that you look at that guy and go, that's a difference maker. That's somebody that can change the game for you on defense, because you put that guy on one side and Harold Landry on the other side and you've got something. You know, I think as far as, you know, this pass rush, I think they need to sign at least one free agent, which, you know, one big-time free agent, maybe, you know, Shaq Barrett, Bud Dupree, whoever you want to go after. There's a few big names that could get to the open market here. And then I think you have to spend a lot of your draft. I would completely revamp the outside linebacker position. Other than Harold Landry, nobody else on that roster to me would be safe at the outside linebacker position. I would go get one big-time free agent. I would probably sign another lesser free agent, and then I would spend two draft picks at outside linebacker, one in the first round and probably one in the third or fourth round.
That makes sense. You know, the one thing I think is encouraging is when you really only have one glaring hole, and I think that there's other holes, but that's the most glaring one, I think it's easier to fix one hole as opposed to four or five that, you know, was the situation as John Robinson inherited the job. So maybe I'm optimistic, but we were talking about this too, Terry. The AFC is going to be very deep again next year, one way or the other. There's so many teams that have, when you start listing, okay, who's coming back, how does it look for next year, it is not going to be easy to get back to the playoffs, let alone compete for the Super Bowl next year. So they've got to make some moves that move them forward, right? They've got to be better next year if they want to be back in the mix.
Oh, no doubt about it, because when you look just at the playoff teams this year, I mean, obviously Kansas City is setting the bar. You know, that's a team that's not going away. As long as you've got Patrick Mahomes, you've got weapons like Tyreek Hill to throw to and Travis Kelce, that's a team that's not going away. You know, I mean, people are talking that Mahomes might be the next guy like Brady to win, you know, four, five, six Super Bowls before he's done. And nothing that they're doing right now tells me otherwise, that I think they absolutely have a chance to do that. You look at Buffalo, they're an up-and-coming team. They were probably a year away from really being ready to be a threat to the Chiefs. You look at Cleveland, they gave Kansas City all they wanted in the divisional round. And then you've got Baltimore, you know, which is always a formidable opponent. You got right in your own division, if the Indianapolis Colts can get their act together at the quarterback position, they're solid everywhere else. So you're talking about an AFC that is pretty stacked. You know, the Titans could be right now anywhere from the second or third best team in the AFC to the fifth or sixth best team in the AFC.
Last thing, Terry, ultimately, why do you think Dean Pease went to Atlanta with Arthur Smith?
Well, this is just kind of a speculative guess on my part, but I think Dean Pease was probably a little bored with retirement. And I think that when he first came here and Mike Vrabel talked him out of coming, you know, into coming and being his defensive coordinator for a couple of years, I think it was Dean Pease's way of taking a young first-time head coach that he wanted to see succeed and helping him out. And I think that's exactly what he's doing with Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith's a young first-time head coach, and I think that Dean Pease is willing to go out of his way and help him succeed just like he went out of his way to help Mike Vrabel.
Hmm. Interesting. Good stuff as always. Really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing it. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com, talking about the Titans. We'll come back and continue the discussion on the other side. David Poyle, his weekly chat with us coming up at 11:15. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope you were listening to Robbie and Rex Road this morning at 8:45. They gave you the chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. Who's going to score a goal tonight? You can win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Remember, your next chance, because it's on game days, will be tomorrow morning at 8:45. It's tonight and tomorrow. Predators hosting the Blackhawks. And pretty cool, because we'll get to see a little bit more people in the building than we've seen at any point so far, and that'll be fun. And we had Sean Henry on last week to talk about it. So the Predators and Blackhawks tonight at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Tomorrow will be a 6:30 start, so a 5:30 pregame for tomorrow night's affair. So make sure you're listening tomorrow morning at 8:45 for your chance to get in there and participate on your Preds Pick to Click. I heard this morning someone called in and said Granlin was their choice. So Granlin to score two games in a row. So we shall see.
I think that was a good one. Would welcome that.
I think they would.
They'll take anybody right now. They're looking for a bounce back here.
No doubt about it. And Chicago's coming off two straight wins over Detroit. So we had a really good conversation right after the season ended about general manager John Robinson. Spent half the show just basically going over his body of work since he's been the GM here, the good and the bad. And the good news is, for John Robinson, we put a very extensive list together of all the good things and the bad things. And what you want as a general manager is to make sure your good always outweighs your bad. And luckily, on this show, we felt like the good outweighed the bad, right? The bad, there's been some bad misses, and there was plenty on the bad list, but there was a lot more on the good list. But this is a critical offseason for John Robinson and the Titans. I mean, critical, because they've got to fix some things that they struck out mightily on last year. And typically, you fix things by free agency and the draft. And those were two failures last year in the offseason. I mean, they just were. The draft, you know, you could say, well, you can't really grade it yet. Okay, fair. But I'm saying to this point, it has been a failure. It didn't help this team this year at all. The draft basically was a non-factor for this team's success. So for now, this one has been a failure. Free agency was just flat out a failure. So for this offseason for John Robinson, if you're going to fix some of the things that desperately need to be fixed, you're going to have to do it in those two areas you failed at last offseason. So how do you think John Robinson's approach will be, with that being said, knowing what happened last offseason?
I think the best thing you can say about this coming offseason is he does get a do-over to some degree, because the only good thing you can say about Beasley and Clowney is you're not on the hook for any money now. Those were one-year deals, and now you can just turn the page. The worst thing you can do is you give contracts like that are multiple years, and you still feel the sting beyond 1 year. You just, now you rip the Band-Aid off, and, you know, you go from there. Right? Hopefully the wound is healed, and we try again. You know, that's so that was the smart part about that, if there is one, right?
Yes.
So you have some money to work with, I think, budgeted for this area. You know, we've been through the choices they're going to have to make with other players that are going to be very important, right? How do you address Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, Jayon Brown, etc. But that being said, I think you got some money set aside to go after this. The Shaq Barrett one is interesting to me. We were talking about the Bucks defense. That looks to me more the traditional four-man rush. So how does that affect how he would play in the Titans' new defense? And is the Titans' scheme going to be the same next year? Or are they going to adjust, you know, with maybe some new ideas being thrown in there?
Mm-hmm. I was just kind of looking at the salary cap. Over the cap, NFL salary caps. This is the site that I'm on. Do you know who's in the, according to them, who's got the most money to spend? Now they're basing the salary cap being at $176 million. Yes, Jacksonville has the best cap room of any team in the league. Well, that stinks because that's in the Titans division. They got the number one pick and they have the most money to spend. Yikes. Guess who's number two? I'm sensing a theme here, which is amazing.
The Colts?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Now that surprises me.
Yes, the Colts, coming off an 11-win season, a playoff team, $64 million. The Jags have $73 million under the cap. The Colts have almost $65
million. Wow. Not a lot of fat on that roster.
No.
And that is one point that Teron made when we were talking about how they go about their quarterback. He says they do have the money to go get that guy. So almost whoever they want in terms of if it's a matter of money.
They have one of the lowest dead money numbers in the league. $237,000.
Yep. That's ideal. Yep. How much? Compare that to the Titans. How much dead money do they have on your site?
So the Titans are in the lower tier. They are in the red, which is not good. So there are 13 teams in the red, and the Titans are one of them. They have $722,000 in dead money, which isn't bad.
That's not too
bad. Like the Jets have over $15 million.
Oh, yikes. Now that's bad.
The Ravens have over $11 million in dead money. Cowboys have over $9 million in dead money. Same for the Panthers. Let's see, who's some other bad teams? Rams, almost $9 million in dead money. Falcons, almost $8 million in dead money. So, obviously, the Titans are not in good shape. They're in the red currently. Meanwhile, two teams in their division have the most cap room in the entire league.
Wow. Now, what I'm guessing that doesn't reflect yet is moves that teams probably have at their disposal to clear cap space. Like, we feel like, and, you know, we don't know until you know, we'd love to have this guy back at the right price, but we feel like Adam Humphries will not be back at that price.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that will change those numbers to some degree. So we can't overjudge by where it is today. There are some moves that all teams will do to try to maneuver and create some space. But, boy, you hear those numbers, and you're thinking, man, the Colts can do almost whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yep, that's got to be a pretty good feeling for them.
Sure. Chris Ballard has set them up quite nicely. And that's why you hear, you know, heaven forbid, if Matthew Stafford goes, you know, to the Colts. Like, really? They get to go, you know, they keep doing this with their quarterback situation. Like, when are they going to be stuck with a lousy quarterback? That's why they've got the room. They've got the room to pay somebody, and they gave what did they give Rivers for the one season? $25 million or $20 million?
Yeah, that Well, yeah, in that neighborhood.
It was a one-year deal?
I think that's about right. It's Stafford right now. It's not like he's just out there for the taking, right? He is still the property of the Lions. So that's the first thing you got to decide is, do you want to make a move if that's the guy you want? And what are you willing to give up? Or is there a better option that you can just go buy like you did Rivers?
Right.
To me,
but you're
Stafford
not going
to
give Stafford
clearly
a one-year deal.
Well, what's his existing contract?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
How many years left does he have on his deal? That's worth looking up, because that's gonna determine too what you're willing to give the Lions. If that's that's probably the best guy out there. That's the most intriguing guy. Of all the quarterbacks that we know are gonna be out there, who would you rather have than Stafford if you're the Colts?
If you're the Colts, well, yeah. I mean, if you believe Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson, and I realize they're not going to trade Deshaun Watson to the Colts, I get that. But, I mean, you know, we could see another season of incredibly big-name quarterbacks switching teams, right, which just was never the case. And we saw it this past season. I mean, it was unbelievable to see the names being shuffled around as quarterbacks, the names that we had seen associated with one team for a very, very long time. The quarterback shuffle was unbelievable this offseason. It could be the same this year.
Yeah, it will. Really, I think it will be to some degree. It's just a matter of, do you get elite guys like Rodgers and Watson? That would be whole next level, right? I mean, Rivers and Brady are at the stage of their career where, you know, we've seen that kind of thing before. Not often, but it does happen. But Rodgers, while he's getting older, he's an MVP level guy. And Watson is still in the prime of his career.
Yes.
I'll believe those when I still don't know. Like, especially for the Colts, because you're going to have to give up a lot to get those guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does look like, though, you're saying you'll have to believe Rodgers and Watson. You'll have to see it to believe it. I think that's
fair. Not only do you have to see it to believe it that they're available, but also that's going to be a lot that you have to give up. The Buccaneers didn't really have to give up anything because Tom Brady was released. He became a free agent.
He's a free agent, yeah. Rivers, same.
He negotiated his way out of there. Same thing with Rivers. So now the name of the game is, I've got the cap space, I've got the money budgeted, but what am I giving up to get that guy?
By the
way, we know the price for Stafford will be a price, but it won't be what if they would even consider Rodgers or Watson. Rodgers, I can't imagine that, right? Watson, it could spiral out of control. Right now, they still haven't hired a coach, all of that stuff. That's a little bit to be determined. But can you imagine the meetings in the Colts offices right now about what the options are? They probably have some big message board or eraser board up there writing down all kinds of scenarios.
Well, the free agent quarterback that is out there and available is Dak Prescott. Now, he is a free agent, so.
See, that's really intriguing.
In my mind,
I just don't think Dallas is going to let him get away, but I guess, is he unrestricted?
Yeah, he's a free agent, yeah.
Unrestricted free agent?
Yep.
They can't even franchise him?
No, they can do that.
Right. So that's why I'm like, how can you let him get away if you're Dallas, unless you have some grand scheme that you're going to bring in Deshaun Watson or something?
Well, a lot of people would say, well, how could you have not wrapped him up by now?
Well, that's true. That's true. But when you have the tag at your disposal, we've seen teams do that. That's the leverage they have. That's what stinks about the franchise tag for the player.
There are a lot of intriguing wide receiver names out there. I just told you the Titans' cap space is not great. Now, they'll have to create their moves, but these guys are going to be expensive. Would you spend a lot of money on the wide receiver position or no? Would you put your focus on rather bringing Corey Davis back, or would you go out and try to land? Are they just going to be too much, too rich for your blood? Guys like Kenny Golladay, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, guys like that.
This is just me. And I've said this before, I'm going to stay consistent. I would rather pay a little more for Corey Davis to stay than pay a somewhat equal amount, maybe a little less, to bring in one of these new guys that you're not quite sure how he's going to fit. That's how I look at it. But what is the gap, right? What is the difference in price? That's what the market will determine. I don't know how the some teams will react to the salary cap with, you know, some revenues being a little different than they are normally. But I have to think at the end of the day, I'd rather have my guy back.
The question you have to ask is, what is your 2 and 3 levels supposed to look like? But what because right now when you look at, I mean, look at the Bucks. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown. That's their 1, 2, 3.
And then Scottie Miller.
Then they've got Scottie Miller.
Yeah,
and they've got this rookie,
the game.
Tyler Johnson. I mean,
they got
we don't even need, we haven't started with the tight end. So, right, layers upon layers. The Kansas City Chiefs have Tyreek Hill. Ah. They have Hardeman. Two of the fastest dudes I've ever seen. You've got Travis Kelce, the number one tight end in the league. Like, how good does your 1, 2, 3 – they have Sammy Watkins. He's been hurt. How good does your 1, 2, 3 have to be to truly make the run to where these two teams are? Because right now, it just today, your 1, 2, 3 this season when healthy is A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, and Humphreys. Is that a good enough 1, 2, 3 to make your deep run?
I like the 1, 2. I think we know that the 3 wasn't good bang for your buck just because he had the terrible situation with the concussion that just basically ended his season. We know he tried to come back the one game. So I think they have to try to recreate how they found that. You know, this is a question I thought about a lot during the season. Whatever happened to Tajae Sharpe? What happened to him? He was a great layer 2 years ago when Tannehill took over. He would have been the perfect inexpensive number 4. You know, he signs a deal with Minnesota. He doesn't finish the season with Minnesota, but nobody – did he end up on anybody else's roster? Remember we discussed it. He became available at one point. I just think you're looking – if you have a lot of money invested, you know you're going to have to invest in A.J. Brown not too far. You got a budget for that. If you have your 1-2 – then you can get creative. There's different ways to not spend a lot of money and try to find that extra layer through the draft, through, you know, finding guys that are not able to get opportunities for other teams. You know, the Titans seem to have a pretty good ability to find guys like that.
I'm just saying, when you look at the teams that made their runs this year, does the Titans want – let's just stick with what you said. Is their 1-2 punch good enough? I mean,
yes.
Buffalo has Diggs and Brown.
And Brown was – well, and I would say a good number 3 in Beasley.
And Beasley, well, right. So there's their 1-2-3 punch.
And really a
– Diggs, Brown,
there's another guy, Beasley. Too. I'm trying –
They got 13, Dawson Knox as
number
a tight
13.
End.
I forget his name off the top of my head, but he's that's a pretty diversified group of receivers. He's – like, cause when you say Brown's the number 2, he missed a lot of time.
He missed right? a lot of time.
So
but
they
he was,
they
but
found
he was playing
ways.
And making catches on Sunday.
When he was in there, he was good.
That's what I'm saying.
He's a deep threat, yeah.
So when you look at the teams that were making the runs this year, look at their 1-2-3 punch. Is what the Titans have good enough?
Well, it
Does
is for their offense.
Up to
because
what these teams?
For their offense, because their offense is designed to use multiple tight ends and run the ball a lot with Derrick Henry. So it's a little different approach than what these other teams are doing.
But all you've said is, and you just used the Trent Dilfer reference from Friday, is run less.
Now that's
which
the,
means
that's
you
the
need
key.
To throw more.
That's the key. Is that your philosophy? Because then you do have to shape your roster accordingly. I don't know what their thoughts are on that.
If you're telling me Derrick Henry's going to get the same number of carries, then yeah, we don't need to have this discussion. But I think both of us suspect he's not.
And does that mean that we're going to see that they would like to have Darrington Evans have more carries, make or have him be more of a back that you throw the ball to? Or do they want to go with different formations and different personnel to use more wide receivers? Because the fact is they didn't really need that many wide receivers this year, right? They had the 1-2 punch with Brown and Davis. And then as far as that third man in the slot, they kind of, out of necessity, got away from that. When Humphreys wasn't available, they just threw they used Firkser as the extra tight end, who's kind of a hybrid. They threw to Jonnu Smith, and they just ran the heck out of it.
Yep.
So this is, it all comes, these are the talks they have to be having with the new coordinators, right? What are your thoughts? How do we do this, and how do we tweak our personnel if we want to go away from it, or do we want to just try to recreate the same thing next year?
We'll come back. We will begin the second hour. We'll have David Poyle in about 15 minutes. You're listening to Darren Donica Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.